last case is Carrillo v. New York City. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are Mr. Bellatoni, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I'm pronouncing it right, is that correct? As a matter of housekeeping, while you're getting settled, can you confirm for me the spelling of your client's last name? I suspect it's two R's, two L's, but I've seen it. One R, one L.
Good morning, may it please the court. This is a case that's brought under the Individual with Disabilities Education Act. My client is a disabled student. She is nonverbal, non-ambulatory. She has some of the most severe disabilities that a student can have. She was diagnosed with a traumatic brain injury days after she was born, and has had that injury her entire life. She has been classified with that injury. She has been in a classroom setting with six students, one teacher, one paraprofessional, and she has her own dedicated nurse since she's entered the school system, 2015 to present. In 2018-19 school year, there was a finding by the state review officer that the district's 12-1-4 recommended class setting was appropriate. And this finding was adopted by the district court. The district court erred, however, for several reasons in adopting that finding. The DOE, in recommending the 12-1-4 placement, never considered any other placement. Didn't consider the placement the student was in, which this court has said must happen. Didn't consider on the IEP the parents, for lack of a better word, preference. That is a word that's used, but it's not as much a preference as it is an understanding.
Well, weren't the parents heard as to what their preference was? So why do we assume that if they were heard, it would not be considered?
Because the individual education program itself has a space to, well, other programs considered. For other students, they will say a 6-1-1 or 12-8-1, whatever else the program is. There was no alternative consideration on the IEP itself. So the evidence in the record was that there was no other placement that was considered. There may have been one discussed by the SRO, but not considered by the school district. Now in this case, there's a law. The legislature, New York State legislature says, a student with highly intensive management needs, who needs a high degree of attention and intervention, shall not be in a class that exceeds six students. Six, the SRO in this case, the state review officer, went out of his way, to avoid New York State law. In the brief, I have an example of another state review officer that said where a child has highly intensive management needs and high degree of attention and intervention is needed, that student must be placed in a 6-1-1 class ratio. This SRO said that highly intensive management needs is a moniker. Didn't give it any meaning whatsoever. Said the parents got it wrong. The DOE witnesses themselves testified that in a 6-1-1 class, this student had made progress. The year before was making progress in the class she was in. That's in the record.
But counsel, aren't you turning the inquiry on its head?
The question is not whether the parent's preferred program would work for this student, right? The question is whether the school district's proposed program is, in fact, an FAPE.
Yes, except, again, the law from the Second Circuit is that they have to consider that. They give no explanation why the 61-1 class would work. No explanation why the 12-1-4 class worked, except there was this vague consideration that there would be more people, more adults available to meet this student's needs in the classroom. But those adults are paraprofessionals. When you double the class size for a student like this student, you cut the time that she has with a special ed teacher in half.
But there's a difference between preference, optimization, ideals, and adequate. Whether we like it or not, the A in FAPE is adequate. And the first question here, right, has the DOE established that its proposal provides this student with a free and adequate public education?
It's appropriate. Free appropriate.
Sorry, appropriate, yes.
And this student, in a classroom with 12 other students, is not appropriate. The New York State Legislature said so. This IHL in the district court, found that this statute, the statute that says a student with highly intensive management needs shall be in a class that doesn't exceed six students, conflicted with the statute in New York State that says a student who has severe multiple disabilities shall not be in a class that exceeds 12 students. With all due respect, that's like saying a homicide murder statute conflicts with a homicide statute. It does not. Highly intensive management needs in what everybody who testified in this case to this student has.
So if everything about the proposal stayed the same, including that the student was placed in a public setting, public education setting, instead of at the private facility, but it was shifted from the 12-4-1, I'm going to get the numbers wrong there, but from the total 12 students with the number of professionals to a 6-1-1, that would be sufficient here?
The length of the classes the students received were also cut in half, 12-1-4 and 30-minute sessions, instead of the 6-1-1 and 60-minute sessions that she's had before and since. But by the way, the IHO in this case found in, help me, give me a second to get the dates right, in February 2018, on the prior year, 2017-18, that the appropriate class was 6-1-1 class. She rejected the 12-1-4 class, said it was not appropriate for this student. At or about the same time, in October 2018, the DOE was developing its IEP for the school year. IHO Carter told the DOE to make the classification a traumatic brain injury, not multiple disability, and that the 12-1-4 recommendation they made for the 17-18 year was not appropriate, that recommendation should be in the IEP. But they made it anyway.
Can you cover in your last minute the burden of proof? I seem to see you suggesting that the burden of proof was incorrectly assigned to plaintiffs. I guess the part that I'm confused about is that isn't it only relevant if it's like a 50-50 call, right? Like if we think that the situation is more lopsided than that, then it might not come into play. Like, how does it change the outcome?
Well, this is the burden of proof with respect to the appropriateness of the underlying IEP. The IDEA, the United States Supreme Court, said the person who's looking for relief has a burden of proof on all three prongs of the world part of this. But the IDEA allows states to modify the statute itself. And New York State has put the onus on the school district to show the IEP is appropriate in the first instance. The parents don't have the burden to show it's inappropriate. By saying the parents failed to meet their proof, the parents didn't offer evidence in the administrative hearing that the FAPE was not appropriate. The school district came in and offered proof. But there wasn't any proof in the record. There wasn't anything that discussed why this 12-1-4 program was any better than the 6-1-4 that the child was in. There are cases in the brief. Second Circuit has upheld New York's shifting of the burden and acknowledges that on that first prong, the school district that has the burden of proof, not the parents. I give you those sites when I get up here again.
Well, you can bring it up when you come in again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. McCampbell?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Amy McCampbell on behalf of defendant appellees. Your Honors, this Court should affirm the grant of summary judgment to the defendants. And at the outset, it's important to bear in mind the standard of review here, which is circumscribed de novo review. This Court has made clear that when reviewing the grant of summary judgment to the school district on the first prong of the Burlington-Carter test, the Court only seeks to independently verify that the administrative record supports the conclusion that the school district offered the student an appropriate educational program. And here, as both the SRO, the State Review Officer, the IHO, the Marshall Hearing Officer, and the district court all agreed, DOE offered the student an appropriate educational program for the 2018-2019 school year. And there's three additional reasons, Your Honor, in addition to the baseline standard of deference, that counsel in favor of deference here.
I'm sorry, can I just ask a big picture question? And I'm sorry if I'm missing something. We have one state regulation that applies to MG, which says that the class size should be 12 or fewer. We have another one that says her class should be 6 or fewer. Why are they actually in conflict? It would seem to me that it would be different if the statute said only 11, or if the statute said, or the reg only said only 7. But in a class size that is less than 6 satisfies both of them. So why is there a conflict?
So, Your Honor, we're not aware of any precedent for requiring the school district to comply with these multiple different class placement regulations at the same time, and that's not what the parents have been seeking here. They wanted to place their student in a 6-to-1-to-1 classroom.
Right, which is consistent with both of the statute, with both of the reg provisions that you say are applicable, right?
It would not, Your Honor, because you would need an additional service provider, because you have to have at least one additional staff member for every 3 students. You would have to have a 6-to-1-to-2 classroom. So it would be different than the placement the parents
But it would be different, but it wouldn't run afoul. Right? Like, it's a different setting, but the 6-1 ratio, is consistent with the 12 ratio because it is not requiring something more, right?
I'm not sure if I follow, Your Honor. In order to comply with both ones, you would need a different classroom than either 12-1-4, 6-1-1. You would need to have an additional service provider. So it would be different than what is the baseline standard under each of those regulations. And we're not aware, again, any precedent for requiring the school district to comply with 12 at once, nor has that what the parents have been seeking here. And here, the 12-to-1-to-4 was supported by the regulations for severely disabled students, which all parties agree the student had severe multiple disabilities, and it was supported by the totality of the record. The in-person hearing officer heard testimony from several district witnesses who testified why the 12-to-1-to-4 classroom would be particularly appropriate this student based on her educational needs and her educational circumstances. The 12-to-1-to-4 classroom is more restrictive than a 6-to-1-to-1 classroom because it has a higher number of adults per student, it has a greater variety of adults in the classroom, and a greater number of adult staff.
What do you mean greater variety?
You have the one special education teacher, at least one special education teacher.
And yeah, as your adversary points out, if you have twice as many students, you've got that teacher has twice as many students on his or her hands.
Sure, Your Honor. You have 4 additional staff members who could be paraprofessionals or related service providers. And as the testimony, I can
do. Well, what are those 4? You said there's a variety of services. What do those 4 have to offer?
Sure, Your Honor. So as the testimony of the due process hearing showed, having those additional professionals in the classroom, they offer a reinforcement to the student through repetition and generalization of the lessons that the special education teacher is providing. And for that reason, this is the most restrictive classroom and is considered the most appropriate for students with the type and severity of needs that this student has. That was why the district recommended the student this year. And that was what, again, district witnesses testified at the hearing as to the appropriateness of this classroom. The burden of proof, Your Honor, both the IHO and the SRO placed the burden of proof on the district at the administrative proceedings, and they both found that the district had met its burden to show that this is an appropriate placement for this student for this school year. I just want to address some of the other points that my adversary made. With respect to the question of whether DOE considered alternate placements, the IEP absolutely addressed an alternate placement. It mentioned the 12-to-1-to-1 ratio would not be appropriate for the student. There was testimony at the due process hearing that DOE considered a smaller setting for the student. and ultimately concluded that the 12 to 1 to 4 classroom was more appropriate because a more intense staffing ratio would benefit the student because she needs the level of reinforcement from multiple staff members. There's nothing in the record to show that the parents ever specifically requested a 6 to 1 to 1 ratio. We know that they didn't attend the second TSC meeting that was rescheduled, but nonetheless, there was testimony to show that DOE did consider a smaller class setting and rejected that for that reason. I was surprised to hear plaintiff's counsel mention the 60-minute session because they didn't brief that argument in their appellate brief, but in any event, the IHO, the SRO, and the district court all agreed that the record showed that the recommendation for 30-minute sessions was appropriate because there was evidence that the student was tired from having longer sessions, and DOE witnesses testified that the sessions start exactly at 30 minutes. There's no time for transfer that gets counted into that. Different school years have different administrative records under the IDEA, so the fact that a 6-to-1-to-1 placement had been found appropriate in other years, it doesn't mean that a 12-to-1-to-4 ratio is not appropriate for this school year.
But doesn't that set up some obligation to explain why?
Well, again, Your Honor, there was testimony at the hearing that DOE considered a smaller setting and ultimately concluded that the 12-to-1-to-4, the more restrictive class ratio, more staff, a higher ratio of adults to students, and a greater variety of staff was more appropriate for the student. And as the court has pointed out, the standard under the first prong of the Burlington-Carter test is what's an appropriate placement, not what's an ideal placement. So there could possibly be more than one appropriate placement. The fact that 6-to-1 is not appropriate in other years doesn't mean that a 12-to-1-to-4 was not appropriate in this year. I'd also like to just address the second and third prong of the Burlington-Carter test, Your Honor. So the SRO and the district court did not reach those prongs, but the IHO did, and this court can and should defer to the well-reasoned opinion of the IHO on the second and third prong. The IHO found that neither of these prongs favor the parents here. On the second prong, whether the parents' unilateral placement was appropriate for the student, the IHO found that the newly opened iBrain was not an appropriate placement for the student. iBrain, at the time of the school year, it hadn't been vetted by any state or regional credentialing agency.
Had it been set up? Was it functioning?
It hadn't been vetted by any state.
Had it been set up? Was it functioning?
It was, Your Honor, but it wasn't fully staffed. So it didn't have a vision education specialist on staff, which is something that all parties agree that this student needs vision education services. There was no showing that the missed services were ever made up, which led the IHO to conclude that the missed services were not made up. And moreover, iBrain moved three times in its first year of operation. It was in the process of moving during the due process hearing, and the educational director could not name the new location. She admitted it would have been better if she could have named it. So for all these reasons, the IHO found that the newly opened iBrain was not an appropriate placement for this school year. And third, Your Honors, to balance the equities, IHO also ruled against the parents on that prong as well. The IHO pointed out that iBrain tuition was $148,000 for 8.5 hours of academics a week, not reasonable. The IHO also concluded that the additional charge of $67,000 for related service sessions provided by salaried iBrain staff is also not.
Did the SRO address any of these things?
It did not, Your Honor, but again, in the absence of an SRO or district court opinion, this court can defer to the well-reasoned conclusions of the IHO on the second and third prong.
So I'm sorry, I need there's something, and I apologize if I'm confused, but I'm glad to have you in front of me to be able to answer it. My understanding is that the regs are on limitations for class sizes, not actually the entirety of the ratio all the way through. Is that wrong?
The regulations, they have a limitation on class size, and they also include number of special education teachers and the ratio of staff to students in addition to the teacher. And this court and other courts in the circuit have found that appropriate classroom placement is based on the totality of the evidence and consideration of the regulations. And here, again, placement certainly accorded with the reg for severely multiply disabled students, which this student was, and was supported by the totality of the evidence at the due process here. Unless Your Honors have any further questions, we would ask you to affirm the grant of summary judgment of the district and affirm the shared conclusions of the IHO, SRO, and district court. Thank you.
You've got 2 minutes.
If I may just work backwards quickly. With respect to considering, I'm just going to ask this court to remand this case back to the district court to consider prongs 2 and 3, but I'll get to that. But with respect to the IHO saying that this school had been vetted by the state, does not need to be. The Supreme Court said in Florence versus Carter, reversing case law out of the Second Circuit. When the Second Circuit said in the early 90s, Eagles Tucker was the case, that students' parents can't be reimbursed for a not-approved private school, a school that the DOE hasn't put its imprimatur on, the Supreme Court said, no. You can't trust the school district who failed your kid in the first instance to approve the school that you're sending your child to.
I don't think there's a finding here or a ruling that one cannot place a child in the iBrain school because it hasn't been vetted. I think it's a factor that was considered that it had not been evaluated.
Well, the Supreme Court said that it's not something you should consider or can't consider because it does not need to be vetted.
The Supreme Court said you can't consider it?
The Supreme Court said you should not consider it because considering the opinion of a school district that failed your student in the first instance is not proper. iBrain does not need to, although it does every year in private school, it does not need to create an IEP the way the school district does. It does not need to conform to the same regulations that a public school does or an approved private school does. But if I can just, if it's okay, just answer one of your questions, Judge, I'm sorry, about what's the difference in the two statutes and why.
I want to pinpoint this. I'm not actually asking what the difference is. I want to be clear that both of these statutes speak to class size and the ratio of class size to teacher is not at issue in this case. What is your reading of these statutes?
Well, that was one of the questions. That yes, the statute that provides for 6-to-1-to-1 class only says that there shall be more than one extra person in the class. It doesn't limit it to 2, 3, 4, or 5. The other statute says there shall be a ratio. For every 3 students, there shall be an extra paraprofessional or adult. So if there's 12 students in the class, there has to be 4 adults and 1 teacher. But again, this finding that there are more people to help the student, this student has a 1-to-1 aid that goes everywhere she goes. She doesn't need the other 4 people in the class. What she needs is the time with the teacher. Now Judge, the other difference between these statutes is the highly intensive management needs with a high degree of attention. The other one is somebody who has severe multiple disabilities. This student does not, and that's another error in this case.
I thought you'd start out listing disabilities, and they sound like they're severe to me.
Not multiple.
Well, you listed several.
Multiple disabilities, traumatic brain injury. There are 2 classifications that get you the special education. But in New York, there's another statute for a student with severe or intensive, rather than highly intensive management needs. That class is for a student with multiple disabilities. My client had one. She had a brain injury. And in the brief, there's a footnote that discusses this.
Well, the injury may be the cause of disability, but it doesn't necessarily constitute a singular disability. I mean, difficulty, deficits in walking and speaking and delay in learning, these are all separate deficits. They're all separate disabilities.
Not disabilities. My client's situation is one injury with different
one
sequelae.
And the question are those sequelas disabilities?
Not under the law. Multiple disabilities is somebody who can break a leg and independently lose their sight, independently 2 years later lose their hearing. These are multiple disabilities.
They
can't be treated in one class. The New York legislature doesn't want children in a class that can address the one injury, which is what the TBI class does, or the class for children with these highly intensive management needs. In classifying the student the single year as a student with multiple disabilities, the SRO stretches the analysis and says that the 12-student class size is appropriate because she has multiple disabilities. But she was born, and weeks after she was born, suffered a traumatic brain injury. That doesn't go away. And every individual that's classified who sits as a classifier with a traumatic brain injury. Counsel says you can't consider evidence from year to year. Sure you can. I, Joe Farrell, in subsequent years, said unless the district comes in and can put proof in the record as to why this disability should change, should be reclassified, then it doesn't get reclassified. And that's a question of law that the district court did not have to defer to the SRO. Again, this circuit has said, and Your Honor, with respect to the sites a minute ago, one is Barkey at 694 F3rd 167. The other is MS 231 F3rd 96. It's the Second Circuit saying that the school district has the burden of proof.
So I think we're good? Yep. I think we're good. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much.